trial court and the state Supreme Court had ruled that Trump could not be on the ballot in Colorado. But boy, did the U.S. Supreme Court faction act fast. When there was a chance that Trump would not be on the ballot, they moved heaven and earth to get that case to them right away, hear the argument, and decide as quickly as possible before the deadline for producing those ballots. So basically, when they wanted to help Trump, they moved quickly when they want in order to get him on the ballot. When they wanted to stop Trump from being held accountable, they moved slowly. And then beyond that, they issued this outrageous and reckless decision yesterday saying that he does have absolute immunity for so-called official acts, which we can talk about. But just this decision by the court, the timing of it, as you point out, Barbara, it was a disaster the way they handled it before they even issued the decision. So back to you.
Well,
and Daryl,
and, you raised just so many great points with what you were laying out there, Lisa, with regards to the slow walking, the timing, and we're not even going to touch with the appointments that are there, that are the Trump appointees and the and all the other entanglements that are going there between Thomas and Alito and their wives and all this other stuff. But when we go into the immunity case. Right. You know, many of us that are, practice criminal defense work, we all figured that there's going to be some level of immunity that was going to be imposed. It was going to be somehow they're going to split the baby and they're going to separate. You know, what was your impression when they came out with this absolute immunity, basically, analysis for the president? I mean, how did you react to that and what does it mean?
Well, I was shocked and appalled because this idea that the president can basically cloak criminal acts by just describing it as part of his official act. And you heard, for example, in that Georgia call where Trump was saying, get me those 11,000, votes so that I can win those 11,700 mm-hmm. votes. He was like, he was calling as the president, although clearly he was calling as a candidate. But you have a situation in which this faction, I think it's an illegitimate faction. It's a corrupted faction. But this faction of the Supreme Court has declared for the first time in U.S. history that a president is immune from criminal prosecution for criminal acts, basically, as long as he asserts that he was doing an official act in the process. And the president's official acts, include things like deploying troops. It includes, things like pardons and the like. And so there are a lot of ways in which a president could engage in criminal activity while doing an official act. But this court has for the first time ever said that that cannot be charged as a crime, even if it is a crime, if anyone else did it. It's truly astonishing and reckless. But not just that, they also said that that the action of the president, when he's supposedly acting officially, can't even be introduced as evidence of any crime that is somehow related to that if it were in his, quote, unofficial capacity. And then it also muddied the water by suggesting that there's some sort of, quote, outer perimeter of activity that might also get some immunity. So it really is, it's shocking, genuinely shocking to see even this court that has behaved, in my view, so corruptly, rewriting the bribery rules earlier this last week to say that, if the bribe comes before the official act, it's a bribe, but afterwards it's a gratuity. This court has shown over and over that it is not acting like a fair tribunal. It does not have fair judges. And these guys are willing to make things up in order to favor their side, in order to favor Trump. And I think it's immoral, quite frankly, but it's worse than that in the sense that it actually puts our entire system of governance at risk of having a criminal president and having someone who now, with the blessing of this faction of the court, thinks that he can get away with possibly even murder as long as he deems his activity an official act.
My mind.
You know, Lisa, it's interesting you say that because one of the things we knew coming into this series of cases in the session with the Supreme Court that the American public's thoughts of the Supreme Court was at an all-time low. And now you have this decision that has now come in that, you know, really, you know, I think has been just another, you know, gut punch for those American citizens who you know, really do favor the rule of law and really do favor a balanced tribunal and believe that you can get a fair trial. So, you know, when you listen to this case and you see the justices come out with the separation, talking about official acts and private acts of the president, but not defining how you determine that, and then sending this to Judge Chunkin to say, to the U.S. District Court judge to say, you figure all of this stuff out. I mean, it just seems as though that's a continuation of the slow walk that you were talking about. They didn't reach that determination. They send it to the judge to have other hearings to reach a determination, and then those hearings will be appealed, and that appeal will go back to the Supreme Court. It's a complete slow walk is the appearance that it has to me. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree, Daryl. I mean, it is another form of slow walk because there will be rulings by the district court judge, the trial court judge, and then there will be efforts to appeal those rulings just to further delay, and this is in the context of having Trump as a candidate who has vowed to seek retribution on his enemies. This weekend even mm-hmm. suggests that there should be a military tribunal against Liz Cheney, that leaders, both Republican and Democratic leaders, who conducted the investigation on January 6th should be jailed. He's someone who said that he would act as dictator for a day at least, that he could put troops in the streets of America if there are protests against him, that he would unleash federal forces to round people up. You know, we have a situation in which he's also said that he would basically direct the Justice Department to drop any charges against him, and has pondered whether he could pardon himself of any crimes. And so this is not like just an abstract issue. This is an issue where this court has gutted the rule of law. And I think I suspect that many of the people who are listening, you know, watched attentively some of these Supreme Court hearings over time when people were nominated. What did they say? And what we know people said on the record, John Roberts, the Chief Justice who wrote that decision, Sam Alito, and others, they all said that no one is above the law, that no president is a president is not above the law. And now they redefined the law to make the president above the law in a way that's extremely dangerous. And as you point out, the public gets it. Even before this decision and the other decisions this past month, people, the confidence in the court is at the lowest level in recorded history. People understand that this court has been corrupted. The stories of corruption of the luxury lifestyle of these judges at the beneficiaries of these billionaires, it's shocking. But not just that, their bias, their willingness to impose their personal views as law, to reverse legal precedents in order to advance their political agenda. The American people get it, and I think that hopefully this horrible decision will galvanize people to understand what the stakes are and to stand up to protect our democracy and with it our freedom from tyranny, from a tyrant as president, from a president who thinks he can act like a king with the blessing of this faction, this corrupted faction of the court. You know, we have a lot at stake in this election and every election going forward until this Supreme Court decision is righteously reversed.
All right now. And there's just, oh my goodness, there's so much to be said. But let's talk for one quick minute about what people can do. You know, people got to understand that this is not, quote, hopeless. You don't just say, oh, well, we got a partisan court, you know, full of partisan, greedy, corrupt, you know, hacks. What should people actually be thinking about? Because there's court reform. You get the right president, the right Congress. There's court reform that can be done to really cool the brakes on this out of control court. What would you recommend right now to our listeners around the country? What should they be thinking about, and how do they respond?
Well, I so appreciate that, Barbara. We are not powerless. It's not hopeless. We give in, then these forces will prevail. So we cannot give in. We have everything at stake. And so I would really urge people to call their member of Congress, call their local district office and urge that they support the reforms of this court, but also that they urge support for the John Lewis Voting Rights Act to restore our voting rights that have been damaged by this court. That's crucial. Make sure you're registered to vote. Make sure your friends and family members are registered to vote. Ask people who aren't registered to vote to actually get registered to vote. Those are a couple of things that people can do right away. And I would just say, to go back to my first point, a key thing is to not give up, to not give in. And I keep this button on my desk, and when I travel, I keep it in my lapel, which is my hero, Frederick Douglass, who said, power concedes nothing without demand. It never has, and it never will. And we have to keep that at the front of our minds, that we cannot expect these powerful people to give us what we need or what we want without demanding it, without organizing in order to overturn this decision, to restore this court to having fair judges and to protect the freedoms that we all hold dear.
All right, now. Thank you so much, Lisa Grace. How do people get in touch with you? I just want to make sure we give them that information right at this minute. How do they make sure that they are able to get in touch with you, hear your podcast, read your mighty research? You are just a force out there. How do people make sure that they're in connection?
Well, I appreciate that too, Barbara, so much. So I have this new podcast called Grave Injustice, which does describe this decision on immunity, describes the attacks on our environment, you know, protecting the health of our kids and our families from pollution and climate change, talks about the attack on reproductive rights and freedom. So Grave Injustice, if you listen to podcasts, it's there. I'm also on Twitter at the Lisa Graves. But for your listeners, I would say if you have a tip, if you have a tip, not a gratuity, but an idea of something that you think should be explored, you can contact me at lisa@truenorthresearch.org, lisa@truenorthresearch.org. But yes, please, happy to help and happy to be in touch with you, Barbara and Daryl, and be part of your conversation. It's an honor to be part of your show. Thank you so much.
We are absolutely delighted that you've been with us. Thank you so much. And at this point, I'm going to change the agenda a little bit, Daryl, and I'm going to go straight into the outrageous decision in the Grant Pass case dealing with the issue of homelessness. I want everyone to get ready because we're going to talk about one of the most cold-hearted, brutal acts that this court has done recently. I mean, they have been out of control, but this is pretty bad. In the Chevron case, which is, really horrid, I'm going to probably hold over to next week, Daryl, where we're going to be doing a complete review of the Supreme Court. And we can go much more in depth into that decision because that one is huge, where they're just basically saying we're going to destroy the administrative state, as they've been telling us they were going to do for years now. And they basically have made it really, really hard for federal agencies to issue regulations and to make sure that the power of the federal government is felt in this nation. So let's go right now, to our next guest. And we want to make sure that we give adequate time to cover, one of the cases that I know we have not heard a lot about at all recently on the news. So I want to make sure that we here at Igniting Change cover this case. So Will Knight, welcome again. Can you tell people what in the world this court just did on this issue of criminalizing the homeless?
Thank you, Barbara and Daryl. And I just want to say it's an honor to be here with Lisa and Maggie and with my friend Donald, too. last Friday, this Supreme Court heard a case called Grant Pass v. Johnson. The question in that case was whether the Eighth Amendment, specifically the cruel and unusual punishment clause of the Eighth Amendment, protects homeless people from being criminally punished for existing in public when they have nowhere else to go. And you would think that would be a no-brainer. Unfortunately, we saw what we've been seeing from this court after they dismantled 60 years of affirmative action, 60 years.